Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. You are listening to STC Podcast Episode 20. Today we hear from Michael Adam, Principal Software Engineer with Red Hat and the Samba team, as he presents SMB3 Multi-Channel in Samba from the 2015 Storage Developers Conference.
My name is Michael Adam, or Michael Adam, which is much more easy to pronounce for most. I'm one of the Samba developers working on Samba since several years now. I think we're 7-8 years by now. I'm currently working with Red Hat in the storage team, so we are working on improving SMB experience on top of distributed file systems. Yes, please, comments. ever since Microsoft had started announcing the SMB3 protocol version, which was then still called SMB2.2, we have tried to implement these various features. Yesterday, Ira Cooper has given an overview of the status in Samba, and so after a long time of designing things and making little progress, mostly due to, well, we are just not very many developers, and it's difficult to get dedicated resources. I want to present you today about the status in multi-channel, which is arguably one of the most advanced development projects we have in the Samba SMB3 effort. Okay, a little bit, a brief recap of yesterday's overview of the status of SMB3 and Samba, which not all may have seen. So SMB3 consists of many features. Most of the features are centered around clustering, all active and failover clustering of the protocol. Let's take this one. Sorry. Okay, so there are basically by now three dialect versions. It's SMB3.0, 3.02, which was released with Windows 8.1, and SMB3.1, which is very recent, released with Windows 10. And so what do we have in Samba? We have the, let's say, the easy parts. We have the negotiation of the protocol. We have the new crypto algorithm, secure negotiation. We have extended our durable handle support to include the new version of just requesting durable handles. What I'm going to talk about is multi-channel, which is, let's say, the most universally useful features of it, because it's not related to clustering. It is also having brings benefit to non-clustered servers as well. So the clustering features are work in progress. You will hear about them in a later session this afternoon by Günther Deschner and Jose Rivera. Then persistent file handles, which is sort of like durable files with guarantees, we don't have yet. We have the underpinnings, but we have to implement the guarantees, basically. And clustering features are some clustering aspects are sort of a prerequisite for that. So there are tracer patches, basically, but no finished things. And that's, from my point of view, the most important aspects. So multi-channel and a little bit of outlook towards SMB direct support, which is SMB3 over RDMA, will be part of this talk. As you see, these things are released since 2012, so very shortly after SMB3 was released by Microsoft, and the new protocol versions have just been released with Samba 4.3, but beware, these are just, let's say, the basics of the protocol. The advanced features are all negotiable capabilities, and multi-channel is the topic of this talk. What I'm going to talk about is not just my work. It's joint work of several people. Most notably, I've been working together with Stefan Metzmacher. So he has done much of the designing and development. I've recently been able to pick up this our joint effort and drive it forward. Okay, so what is multi-channel? Let me just ask, who doesn't know what Samba is? I forgot to ask in the beginning. Great. So, I will briefly explain about multi-channel. I won't explain a lot of about Samba, just in the, where it's important for me to explain our design choices. All right. So, what is it? Basically, multi-channel is a SMB protocol means to bundle multiple transport connections into one authenticated session, SMB session. Important aspect here is that the client can query the server for information about the interfaces, and it can choose which interfaces to connect to and to bind into one session. It, usually the server, you will see in a little more detail further on, the server reports interfaces and bandwidths and characteristics of the interface if it's TCP or RDMA. I'm here in this talk only talking about TCP for now. So usually the client chooses the fastest interface it can get if offered multiple ones. And the one important thing is that the session is really valid as long as one last channel is still active on the session. So you can bind multiple channels. You don't need to use them all, but you won't lose the authenticated user context on the server as long as there's at least one session. So you can one channel. You can plug multiple cables, have a multi-channel session, unplug certain cables, a switch dies in between. As long as there's one path to the server, everything is intact. So that is that explains that there are two basically purposes. One is increased throughput. I can bundle several channels of same quality to increase throughput because the client will then fin out the load disk IO, so file IO over the various connections. And it is also serving purposes of improved reliability. So it's not when just a single session fails, the whole session fails. That's not the case. That's a general thing. Okay. This stopped working. Okay, what can I do? Okay, I already covered that. Channels of same quality will increase throughput and fail back to a channel of lesser quality will keep the session intact. Okay, how does this work from the protocol level, from the protocol point of view? So, the client, the SMB client first establishes one transport connection, one TCP connection. Then there is an IO control, IOCTL FSCTL query network interface info that will be sent to the server on this first connection. The server will reply with a list of interfaces and qualities of these interfaces. The client then chooses to bind additional TCP or with SMB Direct RDMA connections, then called channels to the already established SMB3 session. This is done with a so-called session bind, which is just a special form of the session setup request. Usually the session setup request doesn't, so there is a session ID field. This is usually set to 0 on the server when establishing initial connection replies by providing the session ID generated, and the session bind is apart from one flag that is passed, the binding flag, by also giving the session ID that the client wishes to bind to. So that's the session bind, and as I said, users connection of the same and the best quality only usually. So if I have 3 gigabit interfaces and 110 gigabit, usually the client will choose the 110 gigabit interface and with the option to fall back to the slower ones if this faster interface fails. One important thing for us, because Samba has since many years supported all active SMB clustering with the help of the CDDB software, one important thing is multi-channel. Does this only connect, does the client usually only connect to a single node of the cluster, or does it connect to multiple nodes? It usually just connects to a single node. That's an important thing for us to remember. And then, in order to make this thing robust, there are replay and retry mechanisms, so-called epoch numbers, of channel epoch numbers associated to this, to the whole concepts. These things need, I don't go into details here at this point, but these need consideration and implementation in Samba. Yes, question?
So you said that Windows 5 only goes single node, but if the server is like a cluster thing, does Windows make another connection using a specific IP address? I mean, yeah. How can they prevent it from going to a different...
So, that's the response. So, the server has the choice to respond when asked for interfaces to just reply with interfaces from the same node.
Okay.
And as far as I'm aware of, this is what happens. You see? But failing over to another node is a different thing. So in that case, all SMB requests, read, write, and so on, come arrive at the same hardware, at the same host, and then so you don't need to coordinate how it goes to disk between the nodes. That's, I think, the reason. Okay. Now about multi-channel in Samba. What did we have to think about when implementing it? One very important thing you have to know about Samba is that Samba is not a multi-threaded program, a daemon, but it is a multi-process. So traditionally there is a one-to-one correspondence between TCP connections to Samba and forked child processes of the main SMBD server process. That was a design decision many, many years ago. It has many advantages. It's also arguably more resource intensive and so on, but it's what we are living with today, and it has worked very well. In this case, we needed to think about it because, look at this. Assume a client has one session here, and we want to do a multi-channel connection. So, or I can use this one. We do establish a second connection, which automatically creates a new process. And then we are in this situation that we have two processes with connections bundled to a single session that then have to coordinate how they access the actual file system. And we wanted to avoid that. So, what can we do about it? We were thinking, well, the idea is to just transfer the new TCP connection to the process that's already serving this session. So this is the established session. It's already accessing the disk, possibly. The new connection arrives. Let me check whether this doesn't... Well, devices. Then we want to have a means of passing or transferring that connection over to the original process, the first SMB daemon, and then bind it as a channel into the connection there, so that in that case all the network traffic arrives at the same process here, and then the disk access is automatically coordinated. How can we do it? In Linux, there's a mechanism called FD passing. It's part of the send message, receive message calls. And that was the natural candidate to try and achieve something like that. So when do we do it? There is a natural choice when session bind happens. But we thought it might be better to do it as early as possible. And so the idea was to do it based on the so-called client GUID. In the SMB packet, starting with SMB 2.1, so it's always available in SMB 3, the client provides a so-called client GUID, identifying the client, basically. And so instead of waiting for session setup for the bind request and then looking for the session ID, which SMBD process serves this session ID, we can just proactively move all connections that belong to a certain client GUID to one process and basically establish a per client GUID single process model for that. The reason for this idea is that if you could go back, if If this is done later, then in this TCP connection already other operations may have happened. In theory, the client could have established a different session which is not to be bound to the original session, but then establish a second session. And so what are we doing with this guy who has already happened in that process? If we then pass it, we have to take care of more things. So we wanted to keep it simple and therefore came up with the idea to pass it over by client GUID in the negotiate request. So when the first request comes in, the first SMB request ever, basically negotiate provides the client GUID. We say, aha, we pass it over, and then the response for the first SMB packet is coming from the original thing. This would look like this. So this is the flow of packets, basically. I'm not doing any all TCP and so on. So here's the TCP connection. This initiates a fork, creates child one of the main SMBD process. I didn't include TCP ACK and so on, right? So there's the SMB2 negotiate request. It enters here, comes back, session setup. This is the first connection which establishes the session. Then we have a second connect, TCP connect here. This forks a new child process. And then we receive the negotiate request. We look up the client GUID that we can extract out of the SMB packet, and we look up in our internal tables, okay, there is child one. This is the process serving this. We pass the client, the TCP socket, which is an FD, which is a file descriptor. This can be passed with the FD passing. And so the whole TCP connection is passed over to the original child one, and the negotiate reply is sent from this process here. This is the basic idea. This process doesn't have anything more to do and can just die. It goes away. The session setup bind request is already arriving at this original and original SMB D1, and everything is much, much more easy then. So that's a little more detail of the flow of things with this idea. There's a question.
Is the design decision to use a single process potentially going to bottleneck you when if you have a client that would be load balancing over multiple connections and you have to go to one child?
Wait a minute, what about performance? Exactly, that was the question, right? I mean, we had this one SMBD per TCP connection, and this scales out quite well. But also there, we've had performance problems. And so Samba is not purely single process, multi-process anymore, but in these processes, we do use short-lived worker threads, pthreads, for I/O operations. And so the most important things that could be blocking are already fanning out over CPUs and so on. So this is not proven. This is our heuristics that this will work. We still need to do benchmarks and possibly some tunings. But so, right, what we are doing really is forking for connections and then using threads in order to scale better. And this is, very good question. And I already anticipated the question, of course, and prepared the answer because it's the obvious one. Yes, it's a... As I said, still needs proof, but I think this should work out quite well. One of the next things on the agenda is really doing these kinds of tests. Okay, so all right, we had this, but with that choice, there may be problems with the choice of using the client GUID. It was brought to our attention by Tom Telpy of Microsoft that the relevance of the client GUID may have changed in SMB. Yes, over there's a question.
So you mentioned the fault tolerance. Right?
Fault tolerance, yes.
The process is affecting the two TCP interactions.
Yes.
Right? So you're losing the actual in normal servers. So we do separate entities.
Well, I mean, there can be several reasons for a connection failing. If there's a reason somewhere in between, because the network cable is plugged, the switch is dying, or so on, this is covered. Even if a network adapter on the host fails, that's covered. If the process crashes, that's not covered. But I mean, I think that's the same situation in Windows or threaded approaches.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's not, in that respect, though, the fault tolerance should not be affected as much. By the way, I mentioned that for other SMB, the witness protocol, especially, we will have a talk later today. Directly after this talk, we will hear a talk by Volker Lendicke about our messaging, which includes, so it is mainly due to him that we now have the FD passing. We didn't have that. That's one of the important preparations. And so he did a whole new Unix datagram-based messaging system inside Samba, which is what we are building on here. So you can learn about that in greater detail later. Just as a side remark. So, there may be problems with the choice using the Kleingut. This needs to be thought about, but the problems are even more severe, the possible problems, because our assumption, of course, is that whenever a client tries to do a session bind with it from one connection, binding it to an existing session, these two connections will use the same Kleingut. We thought the client GUID is the identifier of the client as an entity, and this is only reasonable. And we also assume that the server actually enforces this, I mean the Windows server. And there's some evidence from the MS-SMB2 document. I have noted two sections here. So receiving the create request, replay detection, which is an aspect of multi-channel. Replay means one channel fails, so network dies, another channel is intact, and the client doesn't know because he didn't receive a reply packet for a certain packet, doesn't know whether it has received. He resends the packet over another channel, it marks it as a replay operation, and this, in the document, checks whether the client GUID is the same. If it's not the same, then it's rejected. So there is evidence, there's more evidence that the client GUID is checked in various places. But the truth is, as I learned from Tom Telpy, the server doesn't enforce it. And luckily, so we thought, oh, well, we have to rethink everything, that doesn't work, we can't rely on it. But the server doesn't. The latest information is the server does not enforce it, but our evidence is actually true. Clients can be expected to do it because if they don't, something may really not be working. And it's not explicitly documented like this in the docs, which created a lot of confusion for me in the last few weeks, actually. The good news, I heard that this will be documented. It will be noted that it may be a bad decision, even if the client is free to choose a different client GUID. It may be a bad thing, and it will be noted that it's completely okay for server implementers to enforce the equality of the client GUID in multi-channel sessions. Yay! Yes?
So, is there an operator
yes, they. You can assume that the Windows client always uses the same client GUID for
Windows server. So the Windows server would have to deal with the same problem, identify connections coming from the same client to associate the sessions. Right?
As far as I know, it has no other means than using the client GUID, and it doesn't have. And so the obvious assumption should be that it's the same. And this algorithm for checking the replay and validating the replay operation is, looks obvious, but it's not documented as enforced. Apparently, it is not enforced, but we can assume that it's like that. So, well, little strange situation. While we're at it. The client GUID also popped up in a different context, namely the context of leases. This is just a digression here, right? But we were scanning the document. We were looking. So leases, basically the caching, client-side caching mechanisms that are handed up from the file system through SMB to the client. Leases are indexed by or identified by lease keys. And if you look in the document, there is, where is it? Algorithms for leasing in an object store, was it called. When the client requests a lease, so that the client goes to the SMB server process on the Windows, basically requests from the file system a lease. And the just updated documentation, just as of release of Windows 10, it says, okay, up to Windows 7, and the behavioral notes, footnotes, up to Windows 7, the client identity or client lease ID, it's called as of now, consists basically of the client GUID and of the lease key. Both come from the protocol. So this is combined into a certain numeric entity and then provided to the file system as the lease identifier. Starting with Windows 8, only the lease key is used according to the new updated document. But there's a problem there because all the other things, for breaking a lease, for instance, is object store indicates a lease break, refers to, the server takes the client GUID that the file system has given it back and looks in the global lease table list and identifies the lease table to use and then uses this lease key to look this up. So this is, from my point of view, it's inconsistent. I don't really know what to do, but, I'll have to report that to DocHelp so that this gets amended. It's not so bad. I mean, it's mostly an implementation detail, if you wish. I think implementers have the choice to whatever key to use. And so we are currently identifying our leases in Samba with a combination of lease key and client GUID. So we have this hierarchy that is referenced there. It's just a note because we recently stumbled across this, that's the situation. So it's a document, beware, is slightly inconsistent, the recent version of it. Okay. End of the digression. Any questions so far? I have included this slightly modified. There is a question back there, yes.
So what happens if you receive a session set without a bind flag?
If I receive a session set without a bind flag
on that second connection,
but with a provided session ID or without?
So we have session ID 0, no bind flag.
Yeah, then it's a new session. So
then you'll spawn another child?
No. Child processes are only spawned upon a TCP connect. So it was already possible before. So it's just one process originally in Samba serves a TCP connection, and this can very well have multiple sessions inside, right? That has been very possible before, for instance, heavily used by terminal servers or something. Right, this is still valid, of course. I mean, we'll just have more sessions and more connections, especially more connections inside a single process. We'll have to deal with that. So the plan B, if client, so that's what was our plan B, if the client GUID thing wouldn't have been resolved, the plan B would have been to really not pass on by client GUID in negotiate, but pass later in session bind. But as I said earlier, we'd have to deal with more complicated, bookkeeping then, and it seems we don't have to do this. So that's basically the explanation of our design of what's there. What's the status right now? There's a long list. Let's just briefly go through it. The messaging revived using Datagram sockets with send message and so on is done. I think you'll hear by Volker a lot more about this. So FD passing has been added to messaging. Then all our internal structures, SMB structures, and so on, have been prepared to be able to take multiple channels for one session. So this is already released. This has been at least pushed upstream. The code, the session setup code, has been prepared to cope with multiple channels. It's still single channel in upstream master because there's no trigger for it because the session bind is still missing. But all this is in preparation. You see the SMBD message to pass or SMB message to pass a TCP socket with a negotiate packet with it to another process is essentially done. Needs to be polished a little, but it's show you the state in the software branch later. The transfer based on the client GUID in the negotiate is essentially done. It's working. The session bind is also essentially done. Well, we were thinking about whether we have to implement the session, so the moving of the passing of the connection by a session ID. So currently we probably won't. We will just stick with what we have. Then we need to implement these replay retry things. These are in progress, working to some extent. There are details, of course, here that need to be fixed up. Interface discovery. This FSCTL that I mentioned first is also work in progress. The point is, what I'll show you soon is I have a code where we can configure the characteristic of the interfaces. What we need still to do is to just, like ETH tool, just retrieve the characteristics from the kernel, from the libraries. This is, of course, not portable, so we need to think about what to do on non-Linux systems and so on. But we have, by now, a means to configure this manually, basically. And of course, we need test cases, but that's always work in progress, isn't it? And in order to really use it in our self-test, we need the support for FD parsing in our socket wrapper library, but this is well designed at least, and work on that is starting also. So it's either done, essentially done, or some things are still work in progress, but we have made quite good progress. Okay, it's open source. Where's the code? The most recent state you can see in my own private repository on samba.org, git.samba.org. The branch here is, I'm currently using is this. And as I'm working mostly together with Stefan Metzmacher on this, you'll also find copies of this branch where we basically play ping pong at some times. All right. Okay, some considerations for clustering. As I said, we have this clustering where we also have this CDDB, the failover of IPs and so on. What we'll have to think about is channels we only support to one node, but this is in our control because we craft the reply to the interface information request. One important thing that we notice is that we shouldn't bind addresses, connections to addresses that can move. So if an address is moved by failover of CDDB, that would be pretty bad. And so we should, in our CDDB cluster, we probably need to add static public facing IPs to the nodes and only use these as a reply for interface discovery. But that's just a detail. Let me go a little more quick. So when will we have it? So my current estimate is we'll have it in the next major release, which is Samba 4.4, and according to our plans, so Samba upstream has just reviewed and renewed the plans for release schedules. We just released 4.3, and we are now going forward to a 6-month release cycle, so the estimate is that this will be released in March 2016. So unless something weird happens, you can expect to have multi-channel support in Samba then. Okay, there is a few details. I wanted to show how we do our internal structures and a little bit how we reorganize it. But I think given the time, I will just skip briefly over it and go to a short demo. Any questions before the demo? Yes.
Might it be good consideration is best when
different users are usually different sessions because, I mean, the session is an authenticated user context on the server.
The client will be the same, and we end up like having the FD passing the server.
If the client good is the same, yes, we will end up in the same process. So we might have multiple multi-channel connections in one process. That's right. So, I mean, my...
In that case, hop-block is a simple stuff. Could that be a problem? Because there are basically two different users working on.
We are changing our user contexts in the server regularly. So the Samba process is changing its user identity when acting as on behalf of one user or another user. So when that's already happening when we have, for instance, a terminal server or some server where multiple users are going over one connection. That's that shouldn't be a problem, actually. Because there is already code to do exactly that.
I expect that once the FD passing is done, it's like treated as both are part of the same session. All the
yes.
All the stuff like break all the sessions.
Right, right. Is this, of course, if you, for instance, break, this refers to an open file handle, which in the case of SMB2 belongs to Tree Connect, to a session, and we identify where to send it. And right. Another question?
Once you have multiple connections that your traffic is moving around, things that used to be sequential and not sequential, would you get a vagaries
of the same thing? Yeah. Well, first of all, it's the client sending the sequence, and we, of course, have to make sure that, that the replies are somehow in order. But still, I mean, that's actually we just reply to the packets as they come in. I mean, the client, when distributing the requests over multiple channels, we send the reply back over the same channel as it came in, usually. So it shouldn't be difficult for the client to reassemble everything correctly. And I think the same problem applies to any implementation. Yeah. I haven't seen problem with that yet.
How does it think
of performance aspects? Oh. Well, that's right. So usually... yeah. Right. Client are sending over a single. No, that's, Jeremy says we are doing that already with our multi-threaded architecture for IO operations. That's right. So and the Windows clients, being multi-threaded, they already send multiple packets that comprise a longer stream of operations over the same channel already. I mean, Windows 7 starting, I think it was heavily used, and I don't think so, no. Right. So, there is one more question, yeah.
So, the part of exporting the network and list to the client, the speech and other things you expose to the client's
right?
Yeah. Did you see any variance in the speed factor, like how you determine the speed of the network to the client? Did you see any behavior in the client?
Yeah, the client. I have a couple of minutes. I can show it to you. The client gets the list of interfaces with speeds associated to it that the server just provides, and then chooses based on that. So if there's one 10 gig interface and a couple of gigabit interfaces, it will choose only to do traffic only on the 10 gigabit. It's actually what's happening. And the server, so in the server we have to implement how to get these numbers, right, to send back. Was that the question?
Right.
And yeah, so one thing is ETH tool on Linux has the ability. So it sends an octal, which is probably what we'll do on Linux. It's not implemented yet, but we have for testing we have a means to configure speeds to certain interfaces.
So you can expose let's say 1 gig and 10 gig list to the client. Do you see multi-channel being used on both the interfaces or
no? If it only chooses interfaces of the same quality. You see, if there are two 1 gigabit interfaces and these are the fastest, it will use them. And so it will use both channels to do traffic. I will show you exactly that, using a Windows client against Samba. But if then 10 gigabit interface is added, traffic stops on the 1 gigabit interface and only the 10 gigabit interface is used.
And it doesn't spawn multiple channels or anything, just uses one connection?
In that case, yes. I mean, there is, with this RSS, receive-side scaling capability, it may even spawn multiple channels to a single interface, but it depends. So usually... it's for each interface potentially one connection, and depending on the, so even the connections are established, but traffic is just sent over the most powerful ones. So let me just break out into demo. What's happening here? Aha, okay. Let me check. So what do I have here? Is that vaguely readable back there? This here, up here? I guess I have to make it a little bigger, right? Okay, an OR question is always bad. Is that readable?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, cool. So what do we have here? I have here, this is a PuTTY session, so I use it to have one view. PowerShell on the Windows, this is Windows 2012 R2 server, this is Samba. And it's just a single non-clustered Samba server, very easy. It has here the Git checkout of my current work in progress branch. You see there are a lot of patches, mostly by Metz and myself, and so a lot of work in progress patches, really a lot of them, like stuff. Wow, a lot of patches. Hack, revert, whatever. Those steps. So we are slowly cleaning it up, and stuff that's ready percolates down and goes into master. In the past couple of weeks, stuff has gone out. So I've compiled this, and we can start the server here. Start it. So there's SMBD. There are several processes here, main process and already two forked sub-processes, but these don't serve connections yet. Let me now, I have already prepared a watch job, which the top part, I have this nice tool, top part will show the TCP connections, not including SSH connections, because this is SSH here, and down here we'll see SMB status. I've augmented SMB status also to show the session ID. Just out of interest. So what do we do here? I'm not really good at this. Sorry for that. I don't know how to use. Aha, there it is. Aha. Net use. Let me just delete it for now. Delete Z colon. So net use. I did a new session. So you see up here, session appears, and here TCP connection. This goes to the address I've specified here. We should see what interfaces we do have. So we have. I'm not using ETH 0. ETH 1 is the one we're using here. ETH 2. ETH 3. And ETH 4 is not up. So what do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the four interfaces we are using. And now I can show you. I have configured it such that. So that's what I meant. We don't have proper detection of interface speed yet, but I have included a configuration so I can, in our interfaces list, I can add speed information to the interface. That's what I want network interface discovery to present to our clients. So the first one is the slowest. This is 100 Mbit. This is gigabit, and the last one, which is not up. ETH4 was not in the list of interfaces you've just seen. The last one is 10 gigabit. So, and down here, in the windows, you see, let me just switch back. Get multi-channel connection. It has already seen, I could have shown you Wireshark, but I think the time is not enough to see the response of the, would have to go back. So it has seen, this one has the 10 gigabit in speed. It doesn't know yet that this interface is not responding. So let's try to, how do I search in PowerShell? I want to copy. I'm sorry. There's a big file. I'm copying it, and we see for now it is still using this one, this interface. The point is that this is, you have to do it a couple of times, and it, at some point it will use the other channels. Boom. Now the other channel connections I established, they weren't there before. So you see. And now you see, traffic is not, so the dead dot, let me, there was this loop. Wait, I copied this. This is a gigabyte file. And this is really not about performance. This is just on my poor small laptop. It's just a VM, and the Samba is inside a container. Where's the for loop? I had this nice PowerShell for loop, but I don't know how to search. Can anybody help? PowerShell, I'm sorry. Crap. It was there. There it is. No. No, this was the wrong for loop. There it is. Okay. Copying. You see traffic only happening on these two, 20, 30. These are the gigabit interfaces. So you don't see any data on the 10, on the 100 Mbit interface while we're copying. And now, while this thing is going, I will just enable the 10 gigabit interface. Remember, don't expect it to be more fast. It's just the same interface. I just cheated and told Windows this is 10 gigabit. It's not just to demonstrate that it's in principle working. This is not about performance, right? So what we have? Need 4 up. So, as before, it will take a couple of seconds and a couple of copies for it to detect this and then add the channel for the faster interface. Right? I hope it will make it before it reaches 100. But well, I can restart the loop then. Okay. Oh, any questions while we're waiting? Steve.
So one thing I'm just curious about is the RSS flag. Is there any way that you figure out how to query that from Xconfig or some API?
No. Also, as according to the last things I heard, this, the relevance of this is really reduced. So I don't know whether Windows makes a lot of use of that anymore. So we need to check that. I don't know. I have to find out exactly these things.
We'll need to ask them, but their original claim was that that flag will also do more than one connection.
Yes.
Even if you only have one adapter.
Exactly, yeah.
And if that's true, it certainly seems logical based on something like that in the hallway.
But, by the way, you didn't see it because you didn't see my trace, but I did send the RSS flag back to the client, and it doesn't do multiple connections to one address here. Doesn't. So, I did send it. And I can also show you, so when will it happen? I don't know. So, one quick thing here. Just waiting for this to end. So, there is the so update SMB multi-channel connection. So, this has now added the .40 get SMB no multi-channel connection, and this is the voodoo of PowerShell FL star, right? Okay, so here, server RSS capable, true. I sent it, it sets it to true. Even though, but despite that, it doesn't do multiple connections to the adapter. I don't know, maybe there's more to it. But you see now it's only using this .40 interface to do traffic. So, that, yeah.
When you ran the update, the connection command, is it sending an SSCTL to the client to get the list of interfaces again?
I think so, yeah. But the list of interfaces is the same. So it doesn't change when the interface is turned down or brought up. The interface is there. The address is in principle there. It was the same response, but it then newly checks. And so it just cuts down the time out until the server rechecks whether another more powerful interface is available, basically. Okay, so this is now working. That's the end of the demo. That worked. Wow, kind of. Let's just end this here. And let's briefly go back. I just have very little time. Oh no, like this. To continue, but I've covered most of the stuff I wanted to say. Since we had a lot of questions, I'm just want to make a couple of brief notes about the SMB Direct, which is SMB3 over RDMA, so transport. is RDMA capable network interfaces instead of TCP. And SMB Direct itself is rather a small wrapper protocol around SMB, or SMB3 rather, to be put onto RDMA transports. And here the reads and writes really use RDMA reads and writes. And so that's making up for reduced latency and so on. This is done. Oh, wait. This is done via multi-channel. So first channel is always TCP, and then you bind another transport session, transport connection with RDMA, and do RDMA over that. And so we need multi-channel first, and this is a natural follow-up to multi-channel efforts. Here, what is the chance to get this in Samba? There is a Wirefox dissector, which we've basically provided. We have, the prerequisite is multi-channel, which is work in progress. We basically, mainly Metz has thought about transport abstractions in our code and has some work in progress patches flying around since many, many months, I think, by now. But there is a fundamental problem. So we can't do it it's the same way as we do it with TCP multi-channel because, I mean, what do? We are forking, we're taking the connections over a fork, and then we're passing the connection with FD passing. All that doesn't work with RDMA, partly because the concepts are different and partly because when it's similar, they are not fork safe. They do not support passing RDMA connections over two different processes. There's no mechanism for that. And so there is an idea to create a central RDMA proxy. Out of time. Yes, thank you. Just very briefly. Either as a proof of concept, use a space daemon to have a quick development turnaround, but for production, as was detailed a little bit in Ira's talk yesterday, we envision going towards a kernel module in order to to have really direct memory access, remote memory access. So, I just as a finishing thing here, there is an you will recognize the similarity to the diagram we had before. So, it's just there are a couple of extra twists. So, the gray box here is that RDMA proxy daemon, which are called SMBDD for now, be it a kernel driver or kernel daemon or a user space daemon. So, we have the connect, the first child process, negotiate, setup, initial session done. Then we have an RDMA connection coming in. This ends up by in this SMBD daemon or a proxy daemon which listens on RDMA. A proxy Unix domain socket is created and passed down to the main SMBD, and from here on we could use our usual fork semantics. So a connection comes in, we fork, create a new child, then the negotiate request is created, and we have the kind GUID. We can pass it down to the responsible child process, and this can pass now not the TCP connection FD, but it can pass this proxy FD for communication between the proxy and the process, pass it down here and can die. And then we have the very similar, so we have all the SMB processing in the same SMB process, and we have the communication channel with the proxy daemon, which where by establishment of a shared memory area, we can use RDMA reads and writes to directly go to the memory we need. So that's a very high level idea how to modify our SMB multi-channel implementation to also include RDMA support, but of course there are many problems to be solved. We need to interact with hardware drivers and so on and so forth. And so this is the idea where it will go. And that's the end of the talk. There's a lot of SMB3 and SMB general SMB planning on our wiki at samba.org. Many of the things can already be found in some form there. And time is over, but maybe we have time for two more questions. One more question, yeah?
Could you explore arbitrating file system access rather than, FD passing from one process to the other, doing it all in one SMB process, have multiple SMBDs handle the connection, but when it comes to file system processing, just send it to one SMBD, that would kind of make both RDMA and
But sending every single read and write request adds a lot of. I didn't do that, but I didn't try it. But I wouldn't try it because I mean it's an overhead for each and every single write or read request. I mean not. I mean, for each that is not done in the real channel, SMBD. Yeah. So I think we should give the folk a little bit time to switch over. I mean, there are more opportunities to ask questions or discuss out in the coffee area and so on later on. So thank you for your attention.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.